Somebody, you may be sitting next to someone who's kind of going like that and leering a little bit and acting strange. If you are, who they are is members of the preaching seminar who are taking great glee in evaluating me today, deciding whether or not I am able to preach. I know where you are. Remember, I get to get back at you. Real isn't how you're made, said the skin horse in Margie Williams' The Velveteen Rabbit. Real isn't how you are made. It's the thing that happens to you when a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you. Then you become real. Yesterday was another Hallmark day, Valentine's Day, a day devoted to love. For weeks, magazines, newspapers, TV, and websites have been overrun with talk about love, seducing us to show our love by buying candy and flowers and jewelry and anything else, pajamas, anything else they can think of to sell us. The plentitude of writing on love drove Ogden Nash to bemoan, "I think that what I'm tiredest of is poets who write of love. Love victorious, love maltreated, love uproarious, love defeated." And Nash goes on, worse verse after worse verse, describing the multitude of ways of singing about or talking about love ad nauseum. Think about what you might make your list of things you love. I would say I love my dogs and hot fudge sundaes and spring and autumn, and I love to read, and I love women's artwork and music, and it's true. Love does not die. I still love my husband, Charlie, gone these 8 years. But look at that silly list. I put a hot dog sundae along my dog and my husband. How absurd is that? So what is this thing called love? The thing that people talk about and sing about in a variety of ways? Country love, rock love, top 40 love, songs of my day about love usually ended in love and marriage. It's different today. Love does not necessarily lead to marriage, but I'm old enough to remember when it did. And relationships were different back then in the olden days. I think of a married couple who had been in therapy with me. He provided so well for her that everyone knew how much he loved her. She drank a lot and she took a lot of pills. He never noticed. Or at least he seemed not to notice. I remember another couple, and she did everything for him. Kept a beautiful home, cooked clean, did laundry. She did it, of course, because she loved him. He wanted her to talk to him and listen to him. But she was too busy showing how much she loved him by taking his clothes to the dry cleaners. A mother had a falling out with her adult child. They seemed to have patched it up, but at least they were speaking. But they were very careful about what they said to each other. Very polite. It's tense around them these days, but they won't talk together about how they really feel. They don't want to make waves because they love each other. It seems to me that often what we call love is something else. So what is this thing called love? When I was much younger and ever so much more sure of myself, I knew exactly what love was. And depending on how young I was, the nature of love changed. Love, like God, has a habit of becoming whatever we want or need it to be. In high school, love has to do with wearing somebody's class ring and going to the prom. Later, it was about dates and candy and flowers and getting pinned and getting engaged and getting married. For a long time, it was about four precious babies needing me. But my children grew up, and eventually I did too, sort of. And while I'm not as clear about the meaning of love as I once was, there are some things of which I am relatively certain. First of these is that love is not a simple emotion. While love is not necessarily passion or sentiment or giving or doing for, it can be these and more. While love is not necessarily sexual or sensitive, it can be these and more. Love is philosophical, psychological, corporal, cerebral, sensual, and spiritual, and more. And love is not the opposite of hate. The opposite of love is not hate, but rather indifference. There is no way, no how, that anybody is ever indifferent to anyone they love. Love takes time and energy and hard work. Distancing, withholding, maintaining a pleasant surface is not love. And while love is complex, we have but one word for it. I use the same word in the same sentence to talk about my feelings for my husband and a hot fudge sundae. Greeks do better. They have at least four words. Eros is passionate love with sensual desire and longing. That's the one that most of those love songs are about, or used to be. Philia is used to talk about friendship. Storge is the love different family members have for one another. And there is agape. Agape is considered the highest form of love, unconditional love for others in spite of, or maybe even because of, their flaws and weaknesses. That's what Paul talks about in that responsive reading. But the English language leaves us with only one word, and we must make do with it. So what would appear on your list of who, what you love? Now let's turn it around, if you will, for a moment. Think not about yourself as lover, but as object of love. Here is what I seem to notice about that. Consider the possibility that love is challenging, not so much because we don't know how to love, but rather because we don't know how to receive love. I suggest the reason that Robert Munsch's book, Love You Forever, is so popular is that down deep in that private place, we long for that kind of love. At the same time that down deep in that private place, many of us believe we're not lovable. Not good enough, not worthy enough, too flawed. We're too short or too tall, we talk too much or too little, we do too much or too little. I suggest some, maybe most of us, have gone through our lifetime wondering, who would just love me just as I am? And I don't know about you, but I've known to reinforce my not lovable enough feelings by behaving in ways that can make it difficult, if not impossible, for anyone to love me, proving that nobody would love me forever. You know, we Unitarian Universalists, we talk a lot about right relations. We value our first principle about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But how do we make it real? How do we embody right relations? How do we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person? The inherent worth and dignity, not the mask we put on to make ourselves lovable, not the things we do to make ourselves lovable, but the worth and dignity in every one of us. Episcopal priest Carter Haywood wrote, "Love is not necessarily a rational choice, but rather a willingness to be present to others without pretense or guile." Love is not necessarily a rational choice, but rather a willingness to be present to others without pretense or guile. That's what I'm talking about, pretense and guile. That's how we cover our unworthiness. And we want people to love us. But that's really hard to do when they don't know who we are, because we've covered over all our warts. And so we don't come up true and real. We come up kind of not quite there. And we waste precious moments, moments of becoming real, loving, and loved deep down. The Velveteen Rabbit asked the Skin Horse if becoming real happens all at once. And the Skin Horse said, no, it doesn't happen all at once. It takes a long time, That's why it doesn't happen to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you become real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. After Charlie died, I became a volunteer bereavement counselor at Hospice of Anna. I co-facilitated a grief group with Hospice Bereavement Counselor Holland Morgan. Holland said he loves his job. He says that what he gets to do with his time is listen to love stories. And that's what we did in our grief group. We told one another our stories, our love stories, and there in that safe circle, we listened really well. And we didn't judge, and we didn't try to fix it because we knew we couldn't. But after a time, little by little, the sharp edges began to soften. We didn't have to be so carefully kept, and we learned that if we share, we won't break. And little by little, we become real to one another. And little by little, we heal. And so what if we lose our hair and our eyes drop out and we get loose in the joints and shabby? We remember. We put ourselves back together again as we share our stories. And we become real and love and lovable. I once heard Henri Nouwen, internationally known priest and author, speak about the meaning of the Trinity, or most specifically, the Jesus story. I've remembered it for years because Nouwen helped me understand the story in a way I had never before. I just didn't get the Trinity. What this wise man said was that the idea of God, or whatever you call it, is too incomprehensible for humans to grasp and needs to find embodiment, and thus the Jesus story. And so Jesus, walking around and talking just like us, rather than like the old man with the long beard in the sky, that few of us understand or believe, reminds us to love our neighbor as ourselves. To love our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus quoted Torah when he said, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." That means you must love yourself first. You must believe yourself worthy of love and love you, warts and all. Love yourself and love your neighbor, and you become the embodiment of this thing called love. A young husband, twisting his mouth to accommodate the crooked mouth of his wife, that she may accept what she has become, is the embodiment of love. The mother who reminds her child that no matter what he does, she will love him forever, is the embodiment for love. The skin horse telling the rabbit truly is the embodiment of love. Love is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. Love is embodied in you and in me every time we are truly with another. A partner, a parent, a friend, a sibling, a child. Love is being for and with the other in the way that enables them to be and become all they can be and become. Real, worthy of this thing called love. Maybe a little old and corny, but I think maybe Ray Kroft said it best. I love you, not for what you are, but for what I am when I am with you. Not for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me. I love you for the part of me that you bring out. I love you for putting your hand in my heaped up heart and passing over all the foolish, weak things that you can't help dimly seeing there. And for drawing me out into the light, all the beautiful belongings that no one else has looked far enough to find. I love you because you are helping me make of the lumber of my life not a tavern, but a temple. Out of the works of my everyday, not a reproach, but a song. A love song that can heal the brokenness of the individual soul a love song that can heal even the broken soul of the world. May it be so. Amen.